on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Well, Raymond Burke has appealed to Pope Leo XIV to lift the restrictions on the pre-1970 liturgy, the so-called traditional Latin Mass, stressing that respect for liturgical tradition is critical for the Catholic Church's mission. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Edward Penton, Register Senior Contributor, to talk about the possible future of the traditional Latin Mass. And then, the National Eucharistic Congress and the Revival draw to a close this weekend with a Mass in Los Angeles. We talk to photographer and author Jeffrey Bruno, who has made the journey of the Eucharistic Revival every step of the way. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, host of Register Radio and EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director. I'm joined, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Shannon, how are you?
Very well.
So as I was saying, in an appeal, a public appeal for tradition in the life of the Church, and speaking via video link to a London conference that was celebrating 60 years of the Latin Mass Society of England and Wales, American Cardinal Raymond Burke, of course, who's no stranger to this audience, recalled that the most serious difficulty St. Paul faced in the early church in Corinth was, quote, the abuse that had entered into the celebration of the Most Holy Eucharist, and that it was directly related to doctrinal and moral divisions among members of the community. It was a powerful call, and it comes at a time when the traditional Latin Mass is very much in the news in the United States. What did the Cardinal hope to achieve, and what might lie ahead for both the TLM and the renewal of the liturgy? Edward Penton, Senior Contributor for the Register, joins us now. Hello, Edward.
Hi, Matthew. Hi, Shannon.
Great to be with you. I know that this is also a topic that you've covered for many, many years, but lay some of the groundwork. What was the impetus for Cardinal Burke's appeal, and what was happening in this 60th anniversary event?
Right, Matthew. Well, this really, of course, comes from many years, or certainly the last 4 years, since Traditiones Custodes, since Pope Francis brought in this motu proprio, which really put severe restrictions on the traditional Mass. And it's caused a lot of problems. Many feel it's caused a lot of division. And one of the priorities of the new Pope was always going to be, how is he going to deal with this? Because although it's a relatively small group within the Church who go to the traditional Mass, it did cause a considerable amount of disunity and certainly a lot of discontent publicly on the internet and so forth, but not only there. But I think, so this was always going to be a considerable issue to deal with. So what Cardinal Burke said at this conference, it was a conference in London to celebrate 60 years of the Latin Mass Society of England and Wales. So it was a very sort of relevant place to make this appeal. And he really said, he really underlined the importance of the liturgy, the importance of reverence in the liturgy, and how it really is crucial to healing divisions. I mean, his whole point was that the liturgy, certainly the reverent liturgy, is a gift from God, and it also underlines the importance of the first commandments of God, which are to honor him and worship him. And that they're gifts from God, they should be honored and properly put into practice. And so his argument was, and it's one that Benedict's made, of course, many times, which is that if the liturgy is not correct, if the liturgy is not first and foremost put right, then everything else will follow. And so you have abuses, you have doctrinal and moral corruption, and that all derives from abuse of the liturgy, abuse of really not honoring God and putting the first commandments, honoring the first commandment, as it were.
Edward, this speech is, as Matthew said, is happening at a time when the traditional Latin Mass is very much in the news. So the broader context of this, here in the United States, we've had two dioceses, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Detroit, come out in recent weeks with further restrictions on access to the traditional Latin Mass. You've also have the Chartres pilgrimage, which wound up recently. 20,000 people perhaps participated in that, a lot of young people, that's in France. So there is a lot going on just in these first month or two of Leo's pontificate.
That's right, Shannon. Yes, and of course, those what happened in Charlotte and Detroit is very much due to, well, it is totally due to Traditiones Custodes, due to this decree that Pope Francis put out in 2021. And it's led to what many feel are very severe and unjust restrictions. And this has also become at a time when there's been growing interest in the traditional Mass. As you say, there were 20,000 pilgrims going to Chartres, to the Chartres pilgrimage. And elsewhere, you see lots of young families. It's become very popular with the youth, especially. And so that all adds to the urgency to something to be done about this. And so that was really behind Cardinal Berg's appeal. And he said in his appeal that he's actually raised this with Pope Leo. And I think there's a great desire among Cardinal Berg and others that a certain lawfulness, as it were, was brought back to the liturgy. But like quite a lot of things under Pope Francis, there was a certain lawlessness. I think Cardinal Berg and others, certainly those who know about canon law, want to see that reinstated and respected again, just as it was before under Pope Benedict and beforehand. So that's also very much part of this.
Edward, let's talk a little bit. You wrote a piece for the Register recently laying out some possible options for Pope Leo. What are those?
Yes, so he has various options available. What Traditiones Custodes did was abrogate Summorum Pontificum. Summorum Pontificum was Pope Benedict's 2007 apostolic letter, which freed up the traditional Mass and gave... allowed priests to any stable group of faithful who wanted the traditional Mass could ask their priest if he could celebrate it, and if he agreed, then that was all okay. There was no need to have the bishop's permission. But under Traditiones Custodes, that was taken away. The bishop's permission had to be obtained, and then the bishop also had to obtain permission from Rome. And so that imposed very severe, as I said earlier, restrictions. So one of the options available to the Holy Father is to bring back that freedom for the priest to start a traditional liturgy without the bishop's permission, or it could be totally abrogating Traditiones Custodes and going back to Summorum Pontificum, which, as I said, was actually achieving quite a lot of unity when it was being practiced, according to those who were closely involved in it. And so that could also happen. And some feel that that's needed because, as Pope Benedict said, you could have both the forms of the rite, the traditional rite, and the Novus Ordo, the new Mass, complementing each other, because that would show that both forms are valid and that both are respected and that both could complement each other in that way. So that's one of the options available. Another one is for the Pope to send gestures of goodwill to the traditional communities, for example, like at the Chartres pilgrimage, to send a message of goodwill and to say that he was praying for them. He didn't do that, of course, but there could be other opportunities for him to do that. But there are certainly different options available to him to try to heal these wounds and bring unity in the liturgy.
Yeah, Edward, it's not necessarily a direct indicator regarding his potential opinions or direction in terms of the traditional Latin Mass, but it does seem that Pope Leo XIV is very much taken up with liturgical precision and a real sense of reverence, certainly at the liturgies he's presided over.
Yes, that's right, Matthew. I mean, people have often remarked about how he's gone back to very much the traditional trappings of the papacy, for example, wearing the traditional papal attire and using Latin a lot. But as you say, also having great respect and reverence for the liturgy. A little example is he put the crucifix back in the center of the altar at St. Peter's. It was removed under Francis. And so there are various little signs like that. And he's also spoken, of course, about the importance of reverence in the liturgy and his respect for the Eastern liturgies and how they retained a sense of mystery, which he's also underlined, the importance of mystery rather than spectacle. And he talks about that even before he was Pope. So there are various points to show that he is concerned about this. Some close to him say that he's not going to deal with this. The head of the Augustinians at the moment, who's a close friend of Pope Leo, has apparently said that it's not really on his agenda. But we'll have to wait and see. I think certainly, as I said earlier, Cardinal Burke has made known his concerns, and others have, I'm sure, too. And so he'll be listening to those and very much trying to bring unity, which is a priority of his, as he's said many times, unity and peace in the church and to heal the wounds within the church.
Yeah, Edward, I think we'd all love to hear your assessment of this pontificate and this pontiff now a little more than a month after his election.
Yes, well, I think there's a lot of sense that he's tackling a lot of this wisely. He's going about it slowly. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of problems, not just in the liturgy, but elsewhere to deal with, of course. But he's taking it slowly and surely. He's very much a deliberative, considered response he's taking to these various issues. And he's not rushing it. He's not rushing it, I think, because, partly because the Vatican, as anyone who knows who's been in Rome at this time, starts to close up for the summer in sort of June. And so he's got a lot of time, really, until September when things start again to really start thinking about this and considering what he wants to do. And then come the autumn, I think we're probably going to see quite a lot of changes, new appointments and so forth. But I think until then, I think he's going to take his time to really discuss and listen and decide what is the best course of action going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned the summer holidays. Andrea Gagliarducci is here with us in the D.C. office, has written a piece about this, yet another example where he's returning to the papal traditions. You mentioned his vestments, but also he'll be vacationing at Castel Gandolfo. Another in a theme of continuity and really embracing the traditions of the papacy. Thank you so much, Edward.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, always great to talk with you. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio. Next up, we're going to talk about the National Eucharistic Revival and the power of the Eucharistic procession with photographer Jeffrey Bruno. Stay tuned to Register Radio here on EWTN.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, joined in studio, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. One of my favorite recent articles in the National Catholic Register, and you can go to ncregister.com, has a title, Sacred Ground, the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage in the Heart of the Navajo Nation. And the subtitle is, Witness the Historic Visit at St. Michael's Mission, founded by St. Catherine Drexel in Words and Pictures. It's the pictures that are really quite striking, but so too are the words. Both the pictures and the words are the creation of Jeffrey Bruno, who's an award-winning photojournalist and creative director, whose vocation, as he says, is to present the beauty and the mission of the Catholic Church around the globe. Well, you're familiar already with him, having seen his magnificent work throughout the National Eucharistic Revival. And I'm delighted to have him join us now to talk about not just this article, but about the whole experience he's had over these years of the National Eucharistic Revival. Jeff, great to have you.
Matthew, wonderful to be on. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, first, once again, congratulations on your magnificent book that I know that you and Shannon worked so hard on the Eucharistic revival leading into the magnificent gathering last year at the Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis. So first, let's start with a broader question of how has this year been as the revival itself has crisscrossed across the country and hopefully has really taken root?
Oof, that's a big question. I would say that, you know, it definitely it feels like there was no break in a certain sense. You know, there's a kind of a continuity. Some observations, I guess. One of the things is that, like last year when we were crisscrossing the country, you know, going to the different places, you know, I've never been to the heartland of the United States before, to most of the places, you know, aside from New York that we traveled to. And I was overwhelmed by how vibrant the Catholic Church of America is when you visit it. It's because I think a lot of times we think in terms of, you know, where we live, you know, our parishes, our communities, maybe a couple of parishes that are nearby, but we don't get to see the bigger picture of, you know, the American Catholic Church. And, you know, for all the things that I've heard or read or, you know, headlines and things like that, I was blown away and just inspired and filled with hope, especially because of the, you know, just the vibrance of the church across the country. There are young populations, you know, that are coming up, you know, or I should say there's, you know, a lot of young adults now within the church. It's just this. So much. There's so much to be hopeful for about the church in the States right now.
Jeff, there was a lot of publicity, relatively speaking, about the pilgrimage last year in 2024. There were four routes. They converged on Indianapolis. Still, you know, it was amazing. You would talk to Catholics who weren't aware that was happening. Even though it was a very, you know, very involved thing. This year, less publicity, right? I don't know if you're seeing much media attention being paid to the pilgrims out on the road.
No. I haven't encountered any other media, tragically. And I think that if that says anything, it's one thing is that, well, first off, you know, Catholic media probably should pay attention to this, but on the other side of it, I think that it's something that's going to take longer. I think that this is something that this needs to be the beginning of something, and not so much, you know, we did it and it's over. Because if you look at it, it's the soul of the nation, really. You know, it's like that needs the healing. You know, the generation we live in right now, you know, with social media and all everything, you know, like everything, technology and video games and everything, there's just so much distraction in the world right now that it kind of drowns the voice of the church out in a lot of ways. And there's just a lot of people that are out there that just haven't heard any of it. You know, it's like there's a lot of people that are maybe two generations, you know, from church. You know, maybe their parents or maybe the grandparents went to Mass and then their parents did not, and then they have very little understanding about, you know, what the church teaches, let alone the true presence. Goodness gracious, you know, that's and I think there's so much work to be done in evangelization, you know, like across, like the heart of the new evangelization, I think, is the Eucharistic revival. And this is something that needs to have been, well, I pray that this has been the start of something that will grow and, you know, over time, because it does take time for messages to get out. It takes time for people to learn about things and become aware. And also it takes time to, you know, to be able to learn how to organize these things effectively and whatnot. So hopefully, you know, for a generation or two or three, however long it takes to evangelize the nation, you know, this will continue on.
Yeah, Jeff, for our listeners, let's just sort of set up the scene. So this route this year goes from Indianapolis to Los Angeles. It'll culminate on Sunday in Los Angeles, which is a feast of Corpus Christi. But let's talk about the Navajo Nation. So you rejoined the route. Your photos were remarkable. I couldn't look at them without feeling very thirsty. tell me about your impressions of what were your experiences in Navajo Nation.
Well, I you're right about the thirsty part. I get it's you know that part of the country. Like I landed in Phoenix and drove from there, and it was it's a lot of land where, you know, things just won't survive if they, you know, if you put them out there in the middle and you don't have water or something. It's very arid. The Navajo Nation was, I'd been there previously, several years ago, and I visited with a Zuni elder also, and which was further south than that. And I was, what he told me, which was, you know, really incredible. I don't know I didn't go there this time, but with the Zuni Pueblo, he says that like 85% of the people in the Zuni Nation are Catholic. And I was like, what? You know, and he took me for a tour of a lot of the different areas there and whatnot. I had a similar experience coming into the Navajo Nation, and I don't know about percentages of who's Catholic and who's not, but the vibrance of the faith, you know, within the people, and it's a very interesting dynamic because, you know, traditionally and culturally they have a different relationship. They're not, you know, it's almost like, I don't know if I'm probably using the wrong terminology here, but they're not like Westerners. You know, it's not like the European type of, they have a very close relationship with nature. You know, it's like a real reverence for nature. And, you know, in that, I think that, you know, them, you know, encountering Christ and with that relationship, you know, to the gifts, I think they're more appreciative, more humble, you know, to the gifts that God has given them. You know, through, you know, in all the aspects of nature, because they rely on nature for survival, or they did, you know, their past generations and, you know, for centuries, whatever, they, you know, they had a real direct connection with the earth. So,
what were some of the
fulfillment there. Sorry. Yeah,
sure. What were some of the reflections of the people you were talking to? Because I think, as you note, this is a pretty profound moment.
Yeah, I think that in the conversations, well, it's kind of funny you say that. When I spent a lot of time or a significant amount of time speaking with parishioners and, you know, kind of off the record, just kind of conversational. And, you know, it just was, it's amazing. It's like as different as they may be as a culture and whatnot, they are just like everybody else in terms of what their problems are and what their concerns are and, you know, how, you know, to grow in a relationship with Christ, you know, all the things. It's like, there's tremendous similarities and tremendous differences. The differences are more on the tradition and cultural side, but the in terms of Catholicism, it's like you could walk into St. Michael's and you could come from New York and you could go there and you can go into St. Michael's and you would feel just as comfortable as if you were at your home parish, just as welcome, just as, you know, it just everything feels the same and yet it is completely different. And I think that's really the truth or a reality in traveling around the world, actually, for that matter, when you can always find yourself at home in a Catholic church as a Catholic. And I'm not sure if that answered the question, but
it does.
Yeah.
Jeff, tell us where you are physically right now and what the next couple of days are going to be like for you.
Well, physically today, I broke off. I just was covering the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage down in at St. Juan Capistrano Parish. There's a mission down there. It's one of the major missions, and that was a mass there this morning. And then I broke away for a little while. I'm up actually at St. Michael's Abbey to run. There's the Camino de California is here for mass and for adoration, while the National Eucharistic Pilgrims are doing a caravan to several parishes this afternoon, or, you know, through the morning and afternoon. So kind of getting a little bit of a blending of the two, you know, there's similarities, you know, obviously between, you know, both of their pilgrimages. And, you know, again, it's like, you know, just it's so wonderful to see that there's, you know, from New Hampshire to Long Island, New York to New York City to, you know, to California, these two, you know, significant pilgrimages, you know, and Eucharistic processions, you know, throughout the land. Very encouraging, very, very critical, very needed. Yeah, so that's where I'm at St. Michael's and heading to, I don't know what the next stop is. I kind of look from stop to stop. But, okay. Yeah.
Well, while we have you, we have to look back a little bit and get some of your thoughts on the phenomenal work that you did in Rome during the State of Ecclesia, the interregnum, in particular, the election and the conclave that gave us Pope Leo XIV, because I know you were there in the heat, in the crowds, and everything else. But your photographs were truly memorable.
What a blessing! I mean, this was the most frictionless trip to Rome that I've ever had, and that's one thing that's notable. I can tell you stories about that. But to be there in the crowd that moment, there was something. I had been there for the election of Pope Francis, and it was electric, and it was, you know, it was exuberant, and all these things. It was raining at the time, and it was at night, or it was dark, I should say, when that happened. But this was different. There was a wave of this kind of this overwhelming emotional joy that just kind of like swept over the whole of St. Peter's Square. And from what I've been speaking to people when I got home, it's like around the world. You know, it's like it just seems like there was this. There's a wave of the Holy Spirit, you know, I think that just kind of swept everybody that was there. And it just was this moment that you just want to live in forever. And I guess maybe you could even call it, you know, just like kind of like a little glimpse of heaven. Because if that's what it's like, boy, work hard to get there. That's all I can say. But yeah, it was really, really incredible. And I didn't quite catch the part where he was American, because everything was Italian, and I don't speak that. And then somebody leaned over and was like, "So how do you feel as American Pope?" I'm like, "I'm not sure what you mean." But then when that, you know, became a reality, I was like, or, you know, that when I learned that, I was like, wow, you know, that's, I don't know that's, you know, could that be an outgrowth or, you know, a result of the graces from the Eucharistic pilgrimages and from the Congress? I don't know. I have no idea, but
we're going to find out, but we're blessed to have Leo the 14th. I know that. Well, Jeff, thank you for this. Thank you for your work. And that article again at ncregister.com is Sacred Ground, the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage in the Heart of the Navajo Nation. Well, that's it for Register Radio this week. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, if you can go to ncregister.com, a lot more news, analysis, and commentary. Thanks again for joining us. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Rich Jesse, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care and God bless.